American Log Homes and Cabins is assisting a developer in liquidating several of our kits that have deposits on them for only the balance owed. Most of these will save you more than half of the original cost. An example, our Augusta model, normally $42,450, is being sold for $16,500. Our Biloxi model, normally $36,825, is being sold for $14,500. This includes delivery, excluding California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii, but we will pay partial shipping to those states. These kits have not been manufactured, and there's no time limit on delivery. This is a log home kit that includes complete blueprints from foundation details to roof, stack sheets, and a construction manual. Any do-it-yourselfer or builder can erect the logs. Kits do not include any part of roof, windows, or doors. Please call 704-602-3035 for availability. You can also visit our website at www.AmericanLogHomesAndCabins.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
It is indeed time for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Here's your first question. My youngest son has just finished fifth year and will be doing his leaving cert next year. He recently got his summer exam results, which were a lot lower than we expected. My hunch is that this is because he prioritised his part-time job over studies. Don't get me wrong, I can completely see the benefits of teenagers learning the importance of earning their own money. But I also don't want my son to achieve this at the cost of his desired college course post-leaving cert. Since starting to make his own money, he's taken on many extra shifts, often during the week when he should be studying. I've tried to compromise with him by suggesting he only work on weekends, but he doesn't want to do that. I've even said we'll top up his earnings if he studies instead of taking the extra shifts, but he says he enjoys the social aspect of working also. I'm at a loss of what to do. I fear he doesn't have the foresight to see what this part-time job may cost him in the long run. Do I put my foot down and dictate his working hours?
I feel like you want me to put my foot down and tell you to do that, because I think you know the answer. First of all, before you, like you're saying, your hunch is that he prioritised the part-time job and it, you know, affected his summer or end of year results. And on the balance of probability, that sounds very plausible. You know, you're right.
Sure.
But I think it would also be no harm to get a little bit of certainty around that. So if you can, I think summer reports can be very tricky in this way. Parents suddenly get information going, oh, what do I do with this now that we're on summer holidays? But it might be worth linking with his school going back in or getting a meeting with the year head as soon as you can, just to see is there any other thing that the school might have insight into that could be contributing to bad results. All of that said, I do think the correlation with the part-time job that is sounding quite like a full-time job is largely a part of that. I would suggest, look at putting your foot down with approximately 17-year-old and dictating what he should do is never the optimal way to approach things, okay? Developmentally, even relationally, it's not the ideal. But I would suggest sitting with him or going out for food together, getting out of the house to have this conversation, you know, by mid-August. You know, that give it a couple of weeks, but do it by mid-August and praise, you know, his drive, how driven he is at his job, how impressed you are by his focus in his job. Like really, because that's genuine.
Yeah.
This kid is clearly a hardworking kid. Tell him you have noticed a significant drop in his end of year report, but be curious as to how he feels about it. You know, what are your thoughts on this? How do you feel about it? Why do you think the exams or the whole year didn't go as well as it has previously? Agree then with him. Ideally, now I'm going to say agree with him that he is going to work at weekends, not during the week going forward. And really frame it as, look, this is your last year in school. It deserves all of your focus because you deserve to do well in school. And we don't want you working so hard that you deny yourself all the opportunities that your last year in school could offer you and bring to you. I'm curious, Sean, as well, what this kid is saving towards, because he must be earning quite a bit of money.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I would be suggesting that if you, while the optimum is that you sit and agree and he'll say, yes, you know, mom, dad, you're right. I didn't do well because of this. And you're so right. On upon reflection, I'll work less. It may be that you have to then intervene. And rather than thinking about putting your foot down and asserting yourself, you're going to be holding a boundary that you're saying, look, you can keep one shift at the weekend, because that'll keep the job open for you to return to when you are finished school. It will also keep you connected with the people you enjoy the social aspect of work with, but it is a boundary around schoolwork. You're not working during the week.
Yeah. I wonder though, because it says that he's only finished fifth year and he'd already decided what he was going to do after school. Which strikes me as a little unusual,
I know,
perhaps.
Yeah.
And you know, he's got this job and perhaps it's opened his eyes a little bit to maybe there's more than... Now, I'm not saying he's changed his mind, but that maybe he's going...
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. I think he's enjoying working. I think he's enjoying the working world. He's enjoying having a job, all the independence it gives him, the social engagement and interaction. I think he's actually enjoying it and he's doing really well. Like, this is a kid who's a young kid who's holding down arguably too many shifts is what we're talking about, but he is managing it. And it sounds like he did get to school in spite of working during the week. I don't know why, but by the tone of this, I'm inferring it's like hospitality work he might be doing, you know, that because it mentions shifts and during the week as well. But I also think that, and it's absolutely fine, you know, if he's saying, gosh, I really love this and I'd love to do a year after school where at least a year where I work full time, there's no harm in that at all, at all, if that's what he wants to do. But I think when you're going into sixth year in school, really what he's needing now is support, which is often from a parental point of view in the guise of structure and boundaries to get through this year of school and to do it as well as you believe he's capable of doing it. Because as well, you're saying, look, he got lower, his results were a lot lower than we expected. I'm wondering how he felt about them.
Yeah.
And, you know, making sure by talking with the school, what I really meant there was that your belief in his ability is realistic. You know, if the school are saying, no, this is fairly consistent with his work this year. And again, getting some insight from the school as to what they think might be going on, because they also might be saying, I don't know, what do you think? You could say, are you aware he's working? And between you, you could have a talk with him about it. It is worth saying to him, it is the last year of school. It is the last time you're going to be having this conversation with him about not working, not doing too much. And really reframing it, though, as all of the opportunities the last year of school is going to offer him.
Yeah. Someone says, I think that if there was a problem with this teenager, the school would be in contact. Read the teacher's comments rather than look at the results.
That's a fair point.
They often mark down students to scare them into working hard in sixth year, says an experienced mom of three.
Yeah, that's possible. I don't know if I'd agree with doing that, any teachers, by the way, but it's entirely possible. So it is about getting a bit curious about that with him.
My daughter has just finished sixth class and will be attending her new secondary school in September. This is, of course, a time of great change and sometimes apprehension for many children. But my daughter's anxiety seemed to be misplaced. The only thing she seems to be worried about is her popularity and whether it will remain in her new school. My daughter was in a small primary school and was well liked by her class. Despite what it sounds like, she was no Regina George. But I'm worried that phrase may still yet come to be her new obsession with popularity. She's flat out on TikTok, showing us new fashion trends or beauty products she has to have before starting school. A lot of things she shows us are so expensive and unnecessary. Does a 12-year-old need an anti-aging moisturiser? I think not. How can I show her that the things she's focusing on are superficial and that it's more important for her to be herself?
I think just take a step away from the certainty that it's all about the popularity and the kind of frivolous stuff and the makeup and the TikTok, and actually, you know, hold what I'm going to call the inquisitive stance. I think often as parents, we jump to certainty really quick. We're like, aha, I've got you. I know what's going on here. We learn a lot more if we can be curious, because there's something here, Sean, when this young girl is going from being a really big fish in a small pond. Like, she's been the popular kid in a small school. And something in her, she sounds quite a smart kid as well. She knows she's now going into a big school where she's the small kid in the big school. And she is worried about, how do I create a presence for myself? Yeah. How do I, because being a popular kid, she may have enjoyed a lot of that status and, you know, the sort of standing that gave her in her social peer group. And she is looking at, well, how can I chisel that out for myself in advance? So in lots of ways, she is anticipating and forward planning. And I think when kids like this are worried, you know, her anxieties are about being popular. If we could take it away from, oh, she just wants to be popular, and the Regina George reference making, you know, from Mean Girls making me laugh about that, because I don't know that it's just about popular. I think it's about fitting in.
Of course.
And if you were to reframe it in your head as, my kid is worried about fitting in her new school as she moves from a really small school, immediately that's going to make you more empathic than saying, would you get that nonsense out of your head now and don't be worried about being popular? Because fitting in, and she's 12 years old, she's, you know, really on that edge of early adolescence. Fitting in with your peer group is what matters more than anything else. You know, you don't want to be standing out. You don't want to be on the edge. You want to be in the center of things, and particularly when you're used to that. So I think it, this obsession with popularity might be more about, I really want this to go well for me. I really want to fit in and have really good friends. I'm focused on that. The whole she's flat out on TikTok, just going to sidebar that slightly, but see if there are ways that you can curtail how long she's on TikTok for so many more reasons than the cosmetics that she's looking at. That said, do not denigrate or dismiss what interests her. Don't be worried about moisturizers at your age. Don't be worried about, equally, by the way, don't go out and buy anti-aging cream for your 12-year-old. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying,
that is by definition a waste of money.
I mean, literally a waste of money. But, you know, don't dismiss what's interesting to her, because when you can show interest in it, you're reinforcing that she's interesting. And she's at that age when you're telling her how interesting she is and that you're engaged with her is actually really good for her self-esteem, which will then have that knock-on effect of not needing to be so desperate to be the center, because she'll have that more quiet internalized confidence in herself. Instead of saying, I'm not buying you that cream, that's a waste of money, say, look at, why don't we spend an afternoon together making face masks? Think of, you know, top to toe face masks and foot masks. You can make them at home. Don't ask me for recipes. You'll find them online, plenty of them. But, you know, making those together, you can make it a nurture activity, applying them to each other, sitting together. So you're actually doing the whole pamper session thing. You're doing the creams, but suddenly you've made it relational. You've made it about connection and spending time together. I think that could be a lovely activity to do with her a couple of times, you know, over this summer. I think really focus on praising and really appealing to her, sharing her thoughts, feelings and ideas. So it's not about how she looks or how popular she is or where she is with friends, but encouraging her to share what she thinks about things, you know, her insights. So I notice you really like this book, or I notice you watch this show. Tell me about it. What interests you about this? Praise her, you know, in terms of how she is and who she is rather than what she looks like. Stay away from, you look pretty, you look this, you look that. I'm sure she is. But talk about how she's kind, how she's thoughtful, how she works hard, how she gives everything her best focus. Talk about things like that, how she's a good friend, and really talk to her about what makes a good friend. You know, talk about, not lecturing her, saying, what makes you a good friend to others, and how do you know when somebody's a good friend for you? And have her really thinking about the traits that kids have, because when she goes to secondary school, instead of pursuing the biggest group who have are the center of the social circle, she could miss great opportunities for connections with kids who aren't necessarily in that,
but
and are like her.
It would just sound like that, and like, it's because it says she's from a smaller national school.
Yes.
And the atmosphere in those places tend to be far more benign at smaller classes.
Absolutely.
And there's no Regina George stuff going
on. Not at all. It's much more intimate.
Yeah. But she knows she's going to a secondary school that's going to be far more hierarchical.
Absolutely.
And she's going to be right at the bottom of the pecking order there, just by dint of age.
Yeah, and she's trying to work out how she'll negotiate that.
Yeah.
So I think if you were to speak to that with her, you know, and say, gosh, this is a big change. I totally get why you're wondering, you know, how can I make sure that I'm like everyone else? It makes sense. It makes total sense what she's doing.
Yeah. My son is 15 months old and has taken serious issue with wearing his nappy. He's well able to walk and even run, albeit unsteadily. So every time I turn around, he's disappeared. By the time I found him, he's taken the nappy off. This has resulted in a lot of accidents around the house. Let's just say my favourite rug is ruined. I'm not sure he's old enough to grasp the concept of potty training. Is it too early at 15 months? Is there anything else I can do to make the nappies more appealing to him?
I mean, straight off, I'm going to say, how about switching to pull-ups instead of nappies, because they don't have those easy access little sticky tabs that he has clearly worked out how to manoeuvre. And you could also consider putting on like little character underwear over the nappy or the pull-up, you know, like little Spider-Man underpants on him.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it looks a bit cooler, but also there's more involved in him trying to wriggle his way out of all of that than it is. And you're getting him used to the idea of underwear in advance then. So I think you could do that straight away. It does sound to me like he's making this a type of game. So ensure that you're playing, like it's fun to him. So ensure you're playing things like hide and seek, peekaboo, chasing, you know, chasing with a toddler now, you know what I mean? But you know, that kind of play, and increase his messy sensory play in general, because there's wearing a nappy is a very sensory experience for kids, and it's often how they begin to tell us, I don't want this on my skin anymore. But if you increase the sensory play, the question here about is it too early at 15 months, I'm going to give quite a generic response, because there'll definitely be people listening who are going to agree or disagree with this, and because the truth is there isn't a categorical right age to potty train your child. We tend to go at it in a very child-led way. Is your child showing you signs that they are ready for this? But in general, starting potty training before 2 years old, so 24 months, is not well advised, because most children, there will always be the exception to the rule that does it before this, but most children lack the readiness skills in general, you know, able to understand their own body from the inside out, able to cue you with signs. They don't yet have the language to say what they need to do. They're not physically developed enough to kind of regulate that urge to go to the toilet and wait until they get to it. So it tends to be 2 years plus. But the readiness skills themselves towards potty training, you're really looking at, they start around typically 18 months to 2.5. 30 months. That's really the age thing. And so that kind of 2.5 is the most common age to start potty training your child. Now, you could introduce, of course, sitting on a potty to get used to it from 18 months on. But I would manage your expectations as to how successful that's going to be, unless he's giving you lots of cues of, you know, being dry for a long period of time.
You want to ruin another rug.
Exactly that, you know. But there is a whole kind of early potty training, you know, movement as well around elimination communication, you know, where you watch your child, you track patterns, you watch them for micro cues that they're ready to go. And, you know, people can have success with that. But it works best when a child can understand and communicate what's going on inside their own bodies to you. So then you can pick up on the cues to do that. So there isn't a categorical age. But I would say 15 months is definitely on the young side. I'd be revisiting this around 20, 24 months upwards.
Final question. There's a lot of preschool anxiety going on today. My daughter will be going into senior infants in September. We're all absolutely dreading it. Before this year's school term finished, the class were introduced to their new teacher. My daughter has been terrified ever since. It's at no fault of the teachers. We've met him and he seems like a lovely young guy. But my daughter once saw him given out to an older student in the yard, and since then she's had his card marked. It also doesn't help that our last teacher was the real life Miss Honey and never so much as raised her voice with the class. How can I prepare my daughter for September and a year with a new teacher?
It might be learning as you do. I mean, just pick up though, we're all absolutely dreading it. Watch this, because if she's anxious and now you're anxious, that's going to roll this, because the new teacher coming in to meet the class before the year ends actually is a good idea in general.
Absolutely,
because kids know who's coming and they can anticipate with certainty. It lowers anxiety for kids who do worry about that. But the whole, you know, she's had his card marked, the poor guy, you know, that he was caught giving out to somebody and how shocking that was to her. What a lovely junior infants experience this little one has had. But I'm wondering if you can reframe this by playing it out, especially at her age. Get the little characters, you know, like the little doll's house things, little dollies or Sylvanians, whatever you have at home, and just play out the scene that she saw, you know, some kid is up to something or whatever and the teacher gives out, but reframe it that they're giving out to keep the child safe. You know, don't be running, you could fall, or don't kick the ball, you could hurt somebody. We want everyone to be safe here, so that you put context on the giving out. It wasn't just yelling for yelling's sake.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it wasn't. And then you could also, in that role play way, play out the teacher also being kind and playful and remind her how sometimes you give out when you're tired and frustrated and cranky, or if something happens that gives you a fright and you're worried, that you also give out but that you give out once in a while, or that's your hardly ever voice, and your everyday voice is totally different. And that's the same with all grown-ups. So you heard his hardly ever voice in the yard, but his everyday voice in the class and how he talks won't be like that. So you're just giving her a bit of balance and context to what she saw. I would maybe consider giving this teacher a subtle heads up at the start of the year so that he has opportunity to provide that reassurance really emphasize that, because they're really little at senior infant age still.
Oh God, yeah.
So they do need that kind of kindness and gentle reassurance from the teacher. The teacher is a huge part of their lives.
Absolutely. But presumably she's seen him in yard more than once and he hasn't given out all those other times.
She's held on to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's really held on to this one time. It must have been mighty.
Like any class, junior infants like their bit of drama as well.
That's so true.
Joanna, thanks.
Thank you.
Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
American Log Homes and Cabins is assisting a developer in liquidating several of our kits that have deposits on them for only the balance owed. Most of these will save you more than half of the original cost. An example, our Augusta model, normally $42,450, is being sold for $16,500. Our Biloxi model, normally $36,825, is being sold for $14,500. This includes delivery, excluding California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii. But we will pay partial shipping to those states. These kits have not been manufactured, and there's no time limit on delivery. This is a log home kit that includes complete blueprints from foundation details to roof, stack sheets, and a construction manual. Any do-it-yourselfer or builder can erect the logs. Kits do not include any part or roof, windows, or doors. Please call 704-602-3035 for availability. You can also visit our website at www.americanloghomesandcabins.com.